I was very happy to see that the Pope starts off with the situation of people's lives. And I think that's following a very strong tradition in the whole understanding of seeing, being able to see, to be able to understand, and then to be able to reflect on what is happening, our reality, whether it's personal or whether it's our community or our society, through the lens of the gospel and through the lens of Catholic social teaching. And, you know, hopefully bringing us to concrete actions, that is, changing our own lives, or the whole process of conversion in our own lives, and also becoming instruments of transformation in our world at the local, at the national and international level. So I think that by starting off and naming a very serious problem, one of the very serious problems that we have that are affecting the lives of many people, bringing unemployment, those who in the poor developed world and developing world that already are spending 70% of their income on food. You know, when we have an international financial crisis, that raises probably the prices of things and makes things more difficult to get. That's going to affect as well the people who are most vulnerable.
So this message plays an important role already in trying to keep things in a greater perspective.
I think so, yes. And even if you look back, I think this message as well follows right through with the vision of the Church from Vatican II, particularly with the setting up of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace in 1967. And it's interesting that the vision of Paul VI, who was inspired by the reflections going on in Vatican II, particularly of our mission to the world, that the Church is at the service of the world, that the Church is at the service of the Kingdom of God, that the Pope wanted to set up a body within the Church that would, as he said, be like a weathercock, that would help the community, the Christian community, to be sensitive to the signs of the times. It's like, you know, like a weathercock is sensitive to the blowing of the breeze and the wind, that really as individuals and as Church, we really need to deepen in our capacity. And this is where the contemplative dimension comes in. Our capacity to be able to see, to be able to appreciate, to understand where the movement of God's Spirit is within us and around us. And that's the first thing that is the responsibility of the Pontifical Commission as it was then and the Council as it is now, to have that reminding the men and women of our Church and of our world to be in touch with where the Spirit of God is moving. The other dimension I think that's important of this is, you know, not only seeing, the idea of the eyes, the ears, but it's also, the Pope talks about the heart, the compassion, that whole area of compassion, because we can see, and we can see on television, as we see very regularly, terrible sights of people hungry and people dying. But if we're not moved by something, by love and compassion, it'll just stay at that. And then the third thing that the Pope said is responsibility is the reaching out, the hands. So we have the eyes, the ears, the heart and the hands. And the hands are reaching out, yes, to help the people who are hungry, to give food to the hungry, but also to work to try to influence the structures within our society, the rules, the legislation and the laws. And that's, I think, reflecting what is an actual fact responsibility of every Christian, man and woman. It's not just an institution who takes on that responsibility, but as an institution who tries to call our attention to the importance of this process. This is like a process of seeing, a process of judging, which is the heart, and acting, which are the hands. And I think that that really runs right through this document that the Pope has written for us for this World Day of Peace.
So you see it as a very powerful reminder, in fact, to all those who are connected to young people in educating justice and peace. He starts off talking about the families, doesn't he, first of all, as the place where this education really begins. And yet, as he points out, the family today in so many situations is threatened, fragmented, struggling to survive.
Exactly. And I think this is very important because we're coming back again to the family as the unit where an awful lot of things can happen positively and unfortunately negatively. And that's why as a Church we continue to stress the importance of the relationships within family. And this is what it comes back to. This is ultimately what the work of justice and peace is. It's not just something that is involved about transforming the structures of the world. It is a message that has to start with each of us individually and with us as families. Because if we can learn these values of how to treat one another with respect, how to listen to one another, how to encourage one another, to be open as a family as well to those who have difficulties and problems. I mean, you know, it's our parents and their attitudes, their relationship with one another, and then their relationship towards their children. And as the Pope says as well, you know, the importance of presence. That's so important in families, you know, that people dedicate time to one another. That then people start understanding, as the Pope goes on through this document to talk about the basic truth. You know, he talks about truth and about freedom. And the basic truth is the truth that we are precious, that we have dignity, that each of us is important, that we all have a place, we have a vocation, we have a reason for being. We've been brought into existence out of love, and we're called to grow in that love. And then through that, as the Pope talks about, unless we understand, I mean, St. Francis constantly is asking the question, and it's very interesting that the question is asked, who am I? St. Francis of Assisi used to always say, who am I, Lord, and who are you? Because he knew that really to understand who I am in relation to others, we can't understand who we are apart from others. But if we open up to the transcendent dimension that we are dependent creatures, that we owe our lives and our existence to God, and that we have been brought into this world to witness to that love, that if we can understand and appreciate that about ourselves, that we are dependent. We're dependent on God, we're dependent on others, we're dependent on creation. Then that takes away an awful lot of the arrogance. And then that allows us to act in freedom. I mean, to be free is not to just do what you want yourself. You know, the Pope talks about that, the kind of selfishness and understanding that I have my own rights to do what I want and what I feel right myself, without taking anybody else or anything else into consideration. So the true freedom really comes through that reflection on and that understanding of who I am. And then we can ultimately act in freedom to be instruments and witnesses, which the Pope talks about as well. You know, there's no good about just having the nice discourse and the nice talk and saying, you know, all the right things. It can be very, very impressive. But what really transforms is the person who has transformed themselves. They bring that dimension into the relationship with others, with institutions, with groups, that really allows for change to take place.
Can you give us some very concrete examples? You've worked in Latin America particularly, but also in other countries as well, haven't you?
Yes.
Examples where you really see this working in a very effective way.
Yeah, just before, when you asked me to help with this interview, I sent around an invitation to many of the people that I work with who are international justice, peace, and integrity creation promoters from the different men and women's congregations of the church. I'd just like to share some of those experiences from different parts of the world. And interestingly enough, most of the responses were from women religious. So I think that tells a tale in itself.
Is it fair to say that the majority of justice and peace work today is being done by women, or is that an oversimplification?
It probably is. Well, you must say that there's 7 or 8 times more women religious than there are men religious. So if they weren't doing a little bit more, there'd be a problem. But at the same time, I must say that in general, women religious tend to be much more open to looking at how to integrate these values into their own lives and into the ministries that they're involved in. But just to get back to some of these experiences, for example, in Latin America, the Sisters of Christian Charity in Chile, Uruguay and Argentina have 13 colleges, and they are in a formal and a practical way incorporating Catholic social teaching into the curriculum. And it's interesting that they have already, one of the sisters from that province or from that region has been given the task of visiting all of these schools and working with the teachers and with the young people on developing these programs. For example, another experience of the Salvatorian sisters, who are involved in a program called Recycle Your Life. And this is where the school itself becomes the place to collect all of the rubbish, like plastics, paper, boxes, glass. And that by having it in the school, and some of the children as well are involved with the people who are collecting the rubbish, this is creating a contact, because the poorer people who are collecting this rubbish are coming into the school, that the young people as well and the teachers are involved in this program. So that's creating an understanding of the reality of the poor people and what they have to do to eke out an existence. So solidarity with the poor. But also it's raising serious questions about consumerism and the use of what we have and what we dispose of. And then that whole value of our relationship with the environment, which I think is very, very important. Then in Asia, for example, the Loreto sisters, they already have made a commitment that justice, peace, integrity, creation, Catholic social teaching is an integral part of the life and curriculum of all of the schools. And they have in each of the schools and then a teacher, if you like, JPIC coordinator, whom they meet on a regular basis, and there's formation going on for them so that then they can bring this back into the schools themselves. Also, for example, as well in India, in one of the schools there, they have this kind of where the students during their, and this happens in many other of the examples that I have as well, that the children or the young adults during their summertime will go out and spend time in mission areas, you know, sharing their faith, maybe working on literacy projects. And again, this contact is very, very important. But not just the contact, but it is the reflective contact afterwards, that these experiences, that somebody is there to help the young people as well unpack what's going on, for them to get in touch with the emotions that they're feeling, or the either positive or negative emotions, and to try to process those things.
And to try and make sure that these experiences that these young people are having are something which will in fact last them for a lifetime if they're correctly processed and developed.
Exactly. Like I had myself when I was back in Ireland, I worked in one of our towns, a place called Athlone, for a year. And the interesting thing, when I suggested, I made a general kind of an invitation to people in the town to work towards Athlone becoming a fair trade town. And it was interesting that most of the people who responded were like young adults. So that there was an energy and a passion. So the thing that struck me about it is that these young adults were looking for a way to become connected with a social justice issue, but also that was connected with the church.
And again, Pope Benedict reflects on this youthful energy, doesn't he?
Yes.
Which should drive the justice and peace movement forward.
Exactly.
Perhaps when some of us of the older generation are a little more jaded.
Exactly, exactly. But the interesting thing that this document really has focused in on the essentials. But one of the areas that I think needs to be emphasised is the whole area of the parish.
Interesting, you know, that it doesn't mention that, does
yeah,
it?
Yeah, the parish is a community, so it would be kind of the family to the formal education in the schools and then the parish. And then, you know, if we look at the vision of the parish as being from our own baptismal formation, that we are priests, we're prophets and we're kings, each one of us, that the parish itself has to reflect all of those dimensions, like the liturgical, the prayer, the sacramental dimension, with, you know, the priest and the prophet, you know, the announcing of the evangelization, the reaching out, the looking for new areas of evangelization and how to bring the gospel in new and creative ways, but also how to denounce what is unjust, what is, you know, breaking down relationships, what is enslaving people, what is taking their dignity away. And then the whole area of king, the idea of service, the idea to be there. Now, each of our parishes need to reflect this triple dimension of the priesthood of Jesus Christ. And unfortunately, very often in many of our parishes and many places around the world, the tendency sometimes is to put all of the focus on maybe one or two dimensions, but we forget the kingly dimension, the mention of the whole area of social justice, our concern for the poor, the reaching out, the solidarity. And if that dimension is not present, we can't say that we really have a parish that is reflecting the vision of our baptismal commitment as Christians. And it's the same as individuals. These are the three dimensions that we need to be developing and forming in our lives as we go through.
Thanks there to Father Garaid Francisco O'Connera, Co-Secretary of the Justice, Peace and Integrity of Creation Office for the International Union of Superiors General.